Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Josh Brown, it is a massive week for video games and PlayStation things this week.
I'm so excited that we finally have a showcase, Scott Tilford. This has been so long overdue,
yes.
And I'm really eager to stay up, do a bit of extra hours content on this, and hopefully get some new games.
Well, yeah, we're going to try and cover this as much as possible. The showcase itself is about an hour long. It is Sony's first showcase in almost 2 years.
Crazy.
Ridiculous. There's been a lot of state of plays across the last few years, but this is the first time they've come out and said, look, PlayStation showcase, about an hour long. We have loads of different things to show. Jim Ryan himself said he's aiming for total mindshare. He wants to absolutely dominate the discourse, hashtag.
I love your Geordie Jim voice, by the way.
He loves it, man. He kind of get enough of the games, man. So, yeah, we're going to see what gets announced, and we've each made our predictions. We have about 5 ridiculous predictions overall. So we'll see how things go. I want to open on 2 words and 2 letters, Spider-Man VR.
Dude, right, you are so putting too many eggs in this VR basket.
It's a
we
nice
were talking
egg.
Before we jumped in recording, and your affinity for the idea of a Spider-Man VR, like, I love VR. I'm like the biggest
You're the VR man?
I'm the VR guy. I'm the big VR spokesperson.
Uh-huh.
And even I don't think a Spider-Man VR would move the needle that much. But please tell me why you think this is going to happen and what's going on.
It's Spider-Man in VR. What else do you need? If you literally have a marketing push that says, hey, do you want to be Spider-Man? Hit the button and you can be Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Jumping off the building with the thwips.
No, listen, I'm not going to deny that the idea of Spider-Man in VR would be outstanding. Right. I want to be swinging around New York in first person in VR as much as anyone else. I want to be riding the subway as Spider-Man. I could probably do that anyway, but it would cost me thousands and thousands of pounds if I wanted to do that in real life. I think it would be a great no-brainer for them to mesh those two worlds. However, I just worry that I don't think that's the system seller. I think it would maybe shift copies, but I'm not entirely sure.
Oh, that's fascinating. For me, it's just that idea of, you know, letting you be Spider-Man, the thing that you imagined when you were a kid. Obviously, there is the safety side of things where there's all the weird health and safety stuff with what is it? Because the thing is, they've tried a version of this before on the Spider-Man Far From Home VR tie-in experience thing where you finish that, maybe in the Homecoming tie-in as well.
Yeah.
Far From Home let you explore more of the city. So we've kind of got an idea of what it's like to swing around in VR, and it's like, it is very momentum heavy. It is quite sickening, but I feel like there's hopefully a way to make that work.
That's it. I just wouldn't want people's imaginations to go wild with the idea of what Spider-Man VR could be, because VR is great. The PSVR 2 is a great piece of kit, but it still has its limitations. You know, there are still limits to what you can achieve in terms of the size of the game world that you're occupying in the VR space. So I worry that you would have to neuter the experience a little bit too much, and you wouldn't get the sense of momentum that you would want, and it would just feel not quite there. And I think that if something is even a little bit off with the swinging or the combat or the movement, you would notice it immediately.
Yeah.
But that said, Iron Man VR absolutely rocked, and they got the sense of 360 flying in that. But even then, the environments were a little bit small and the combat was kind of a little bit limited. I think there's potential. I think that a Spider-Man VR 2 would be where the dream becomes a reality rather than a first go at it. But I could be completely wrong.
I'm just saying you can literally make the Raimi scene where you're on the edge of the building, up and away web. You can make the same, you can do the hand things.
You could do the hand things.
PSVR 2 would let you do the hand things, and then you could leap off and smash into a billboard.
The thing is, right, and I know that a lot of people have issues with nausea when it comes to
VR.
That's
what I'm saying. I think it'll make a lot of people sick.
Yeah, and I think we could get the hang of just swinging around. You know, we've had VR demos, showing that already. I don't know how you would implement Spider-Man's moveset into a VR space without making you sick, because that guy does a lot of flips.
He does.
Is all I'm saying.
And he is constantly upside down.
I don't want to be a downer on this. I go back to the idea that people's imaginations with VR, like, kind of like say, run wild. And there were a lot of people who were disappointed with the PSVR 2 specifically, because it's hard to sell what that machine, what that piece of kit actually can accomplish unless you've tried it yourself. And you will see these radical trailers of Spider-Man swinging around, and the Sony spokesperson will be saying, that could be you.
It was class one.
But then you'd get it on and there would be like these limitations that, you know, that aren't advertised for natural reasons. And I just worry about expectations and people being like, nah, this is no good, this ain't the future.
That is fair enough to say. Something else that seems like a more dead cert of something that we're going to be getting is Spider-Man 2 gameplay. You note it down. This is your reveal. You note it down. A lot of Spider-Man 2 gameplay, a Venom design reveal, and the September release date.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like we're long overdue any Spider-Man content right now. That game was announced a little while ago. We've not seen any major update on that since. We've not seen another CGI trailer. We've not seen any gameplay. It's allegedly coming out this year. All the rumors point towards September. And I think now, a few months out from that, we want to see a big gameplay reveal. And we want to see specifically how things have changed. And this is what I want to ask you, because I love Spider-Man. You know, Marvel's Spider-Man was one of my favorite games of that year. I even enjoyed it more than the original God of War, if you can believe that.
Ooh,
I know, right?
I might back that.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
No,
I didn't expect that. I know.
No, I need to ponder on this. I love Miles Morales so much that I would hold up Miles Morales individually, but no, 2018 God of War above Spider-Man. Yeah, okay.
Well, Spider-Man 2 is going to sell regardless, right? Spider-Man 2 is going to sell 20 million copies plus. It's going to shift PlayStation 5s. They could do the bare minimum and still probably make a great game, but I want them to push themselves with this. Miles Morales was excellent, but it was more of the same. It was a big expansion pack, more or less. And I want to see what they can do with the power of the PS5, because it is an exclusive, and give us something that really blows our minds in the same way that the first one did. I don't just want to see this follow the model of Horizon Forbidden West and give us an iterative sequel.
Same.
I want to see a proper revolution. I want to see what new stuff they've added on top of the already great core.
Yeah, they have to have some sort of gameplay mechanic in there that feels like we didn't expect it. There's assumptions of co-op stuff. There's assumptions of maybe you can, you know, dive into your friend's game and control Miles alongside Peter or whatever. I just hope they do something with that to like flesh it out and make it more identifiable. Because it's a weird thing, because they've built this 1:16 scale of New York. Obviously, there's a lot of, you know, time went into that. It's like, how do you make that feel fresh when we've spent so much time in that map? I'm assuming interiors, I'm assuming SSD loading stuff gets out, gets all that stuff out the way, and you kind of deliver on what Assassin's Creed 3 was going for, when the idea was you could just go inside any interior. That's what The Getaway was going for like 20 years ago. Snip into the McDonald's and elude the police or whatever.
It's what Arkham City did really well. You know, that kind of managed to mesh together a really detailed open world with really interesting gameplay levels in those interiors.
There's one thing, when I played Miles Morales, back in the ray tracing craze of the end of 2020, when I was like, I need to see what this PS5 can do. Because ray tracing, it's a gimmick. We'll come back to that at some point. But there was one bit when I was playing Miles Morales and I was fighting some dudes outside a building, and there was a glass walled, another part of the building. And I threw a man through that, and all the glass shattered, all the ray tracing stuff. It looked brilliant. And then I continued the fight inside, and I was like, is this the next generation? Is this what we do? The fact that interior was always there, but I wouldn't know it because of the mirrored wall and everything.
Yes.
Do more of that stuff. Do more things where you're mixing exteriors and interiors, and you're not even thinking about loading because everything is just so immediate.
No, I think you're spot on there, man. Like, I want to see more interactivity with the world itself, because like you said, we've had two games already that are set in New York City, and it's a great New York City. I love the detail that's in there. We've had a bunch of other Spider-Man games set in New York City. With a next-gen sequel, how would you make that more interesting? How would you make flying through those streets feel fresh when we've done so many before? Two webs.
Like Spider-Man.
Well, can we get back to that? Because I really want to talk about what I want them to do with the web swinging system, but also, like you said there, what can make this feel next gen? It's funny because Adam Nicholas, the great Adam Nicholas, is in this room right now.
He is.
And he's about to find out that I always tell the story about when he got Miles Morales.
Right, okay.
And he was like, well, where's the next gen stuff? And then flicked it to 60 frames per second and was like,
oh,
this actually feels different now. Yes. This feels substantial. And I want that, but in the gameplay, and I want that feeling, but in the web swinging and the visuals and all of that jazz, because because I just, you know, they don't even need to fight this hard, but I want to see them fight this hard. I want Spider-Man to become Sony's premier franchise, honestly, at this point.
It kind of is. Like, I feel like right now, you know, God of War Ragnarok was solid enough. Like, obviously, like, a lot of people love that game, but I don't feel like it set the world on fire the way the 2018 one did. Horizon is, again, solid enough, but I don't feel like anyone is talking about Burning Shores, and the people that have just finished the DLC are like, it's fine, it's more Burning Shores, or whatever. So, yeah, it's kind of all eyes on Spidey, and obviously the Spidey's a way bigger, wider character as well in terms of like the overall culture sphere.
I think an easy win for them is to kind of do what they did with Miles Morales and give you an all-new tool set. Like, the best part of that game, in my opinion, was the Venom abilities that Miles Morales obviously has, differentiated him from Peter Parker Spider-Man. And I just ended up preferring that moveset more than I did the gadgets and the sci-fi focus of Peter's gameplay in the previous game. I think, obviously, this time around, you've got Venom in there. Mm-hmm. You are almost certain that at least Miles or Peter at some point is going to don the Venom suit and will get those powers, presumably. And I think that's another way to differentiate the combat by giving you those, literally in this case, Venom abilities.
What if they Ultimate Spider-Man it and you just play as Venom?
I'd love that.
I want that way more than I want a symbiote suit again. As I love Web of Shadows, I don't want that again.
I want to be able to run around as Tony Todd's Venom in particular with that distinctive voice. That'll never get old, by the way. Yeah, but in terms of the swinging, just going back to that, actually, just as a final thing, I want to see that kind of become more skill-based in a way. You know, it was so cinematic in the previous game. It was so cinematic in the Amazing Spider-Man game. Mm-hmm. I think they've got that nailed, the sense of momentum. The animations are absolutely astounding, especially in the Miles Morales game. But I want to see a bit more complexity added on, kind of like how those other older games give you more freedom in terms of how you use your webs.
No, man. Well, the thing is, they teased the idea of like that Tony Hawk style stunt system, trick system thing. Yeah. There was very little there, but you could do like four different spins or whatever. And then in Miles Morales, you could do the Spider-Verse, like arms behind the head thing, which is really, really cool. But like that was a bit more timing based. But there should be something in there, like you said, where you can really show off being Spidey.
Yeah.
And tie that in with all the different speed boosts and things like that, and kicking off walls and whatever else.
Yeah. One last thing before we move on.
Yes.
Do you think they'll change his face again? Third time's a charm. Go for
maybe
the
you
for
make
new one.
The Adam Nicholas cheering in the corner. Maybe, the thing is, what was that, the tweet that's been doing the rounds about name a bigger downgrade? And it was like both faces of Spider-Men. I don't know, maybe they do the original face as a DLC or something. I feel like I always forget that we changed the face, because I always, when I think about Spider-Man, I think about that original playthrough. I don't think about the remaster one, because I didn't play through the remaster. Not the whole way through, anyway.
It still is good. I came around to it eventually, but it's like, it was kind of needless overall.
Hashtag not my Peter.
Final question, even though I said the last comment was a final thing on this, but do you think they'll at all tease any multiverse stuff? Multiverse is so in right now.
I really hope not.
Don't think they need it, but no.
Well, the thing is, like, back when the original one was coming out, there was all that stuff from Brian Intihar Insomniac saying, like, is it Insomniac? Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, that whole thing about, like, we got the Avengers Tower in there, and, like, Iron Man was the tip of the spear for the movie side of things, and, like, hey, if we get Spider-Man right, then we'll see what happens. And obviously we ran with that as, like, the gaming MCU and whatever. But in reality, the Avengers game bombed. Not that it was tied in anyway, but there was a potential to tie those things in. Like, you had the Guardians game coming up, you had the Avengers game. I hope they kind of keep it as their own thing, like Insomniac Spidey is like its own thing. Even though Insomniac Spider-Man is in the new Spider-Verse film.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of wider stuff happening there.
I think it shows the impact of that game, by the way, that it has this massive crossover appeal. I want to see him become an actual like character in like other media at this point. I love that version.
I'm curious about that stuff. I like it being their own defined version of it. I feel like that's what Avengers was trying to do, and they kind of fell down. The Guardians game nailed it, but it's like whether or not we find that with the new Spider-Man, we'll see. You also had down, as another one of yours, Death Stranding 2, a 2024 release day, and also a combat showcase. Beyond time.
I don't want to be cynical in this podcast, but I'm going to be anyway.
Okay.
Death Stranding 2, one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah.
Playing the director's cut was just as good as the first time around. An unreal game. I think they have the formula down to a T. The one thing I think a lot of people were disappointed by, myself included, was the combat element. And I don't want to see any combat in Death Stranding 2, but they're obviously going to have it in there, I think. You know, it was in the first game. I think people would have warmed to it a little bit more if there was maybe a larger focus on combat. So I think, to its detriment, they might kind of show in the new trailer, if they do show gameplay, that they've refined the combat a little bit and that it might be more of a core pillar. That wouldn't please me, but I think it might help shift units.
The thing is, that's weird. In the DLC, sorry, in the director's cut, they had the extra levels that were more Metal Gear-y, and they were more stealth focused in theory, but you could also just run and gun them if you want. And obviously, you get way more weapons and stuff. It feels like overall Kojima is like, you know, teasing the idea of something more Metal Gear adjacent or whatever. I feel like I'm just so curious what they do for a Death Stranding 2. That original one felt like such a one-off, such a blank check, you know, taking you from Konami, here's your blank check, just make something for us, and we hope it's Metal Gear, and it so was not. And I'm really curious as how, you know, what conversations happen from that, where they go, okay, Hideo, you did your big dream project, and we get something a bit more mass appeal. I don't want that at all.
No.
I want him to be maximum Kojima all of the time. But I feel like, I'm fascinated by just how those, you know, design goals land.
My relationship to this series at this point is kind of like what you always talk about with The Last of Us. Mm. I think the original Death Stranding is like a pretty perfect game, and I don't know where you go from there, like you were just saying. But that's kind of exciting in and of itself. I want to see them double down on the movement mechanics. I think they got to such a great space at the end of that first game, and with the director's cut additions, with all of the different items and abilities that you had in order to kind of connect this world again. I wonder whether they completely changed the landscape this time around and give us something radically different, because it was very kind of, well, it was green, wasn't it? It was a lot of greenery, a lot of water.
It was a lot of green.
A lot of mountains, and I loved that for the aesthetic, and I honestly would just take that again if I had to choose, but I think he will kind of shake things up, and I wonder how just the geography change would change the gameplay, because so much of that game is just traversal and figuring out the best way to get from point A to B, that if you just change the geography, it just completely changes the experience in a
what
way.
If Death Stranding 2 is the next Tears of the Kingdom? Because they were already down that road anyway, of it, just build a bridge wherever you wanted, Olympus could sell. And in terms of, you know, just figuring out different ways up mountains, different ladders, whatever it is, maybe you get things like cannons and whatever. They put things in the DLC, I keep calling it the DLC, but in the director's cut, that lets you fire packages back to home base, and you have the little drone character that's walking around. That game has the kind of same ethos as Tears of the Kingdom, where it's just build your solution, like build your own way through this environment. Maybe they double down on that with the physics side of things and go banana sandwich with it.
That would be sick. I mean, that would make a lot of sense in terms of the multiplayer component that was in the first game, which, you know, I don't often think about that when I think about Death Stranding, but it was such a big part of the experience and a big part of that dopamine hit you would get from building structures and then having other people give you loads of thumbs up. Like, that was really cool, and it's a cool starting point. I want to know what, like, the next gen integration, how the next gen integration will change that and transform it and maybe make it more robust. And maybe if you get a little bit more freeform with where you can place things and get a bit more ambitious with the structures that you can make.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
That could be really cool if instead of just building a regular bridge, you make this crazy improvised bridge that is like your own creation that people appreciate more because it's like, well, you didn't just get this prefab thing down. Yes. You actually used a bit of ingenuity there.
You
can
bring
help me
in
out.
Like the Hot Wheels mentality. Of making like a corkscrew and it fires you back out the other side. It might not be remotely what Kojima wants to go for, but I'm curious.
He did have that driving track in the DLC, didn't he? So
about the whole racing minigame thing? Yeah, okay. Yeah, it might just end up being like the every game, but I guess we'll see. And the next thing I had down is Wolverine gameplay / what's next for Insomniac. Sucker Punch. No.
Insomniac.
Yeah. I keep getting Sucker Punch and Insomniac mixed up because they seem to be of the same kind of caliber of like, we love everything that they put out and we want to see what they're going to be doing next. But Wolverine is long overdue. Also, after Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart came out, I forget the name of the specific developer, but there was a dev that came out just trying to address crunch culture, trying to address the amount of games that they turn over, saying that they are very regimented in terms of their turnover, which kind of, you know, points at the idea that Wolverine is way further along than we think.
Right.
And I just wonder if that's your next big exclusive thing, either for later this year, Shock Drop, because they need to fill out the rest of this calendar anyway.
They do, but I think they've kind of got enough, you know, especially for this year. Mm. You know, we've got the two Final Fantasy games to come. We have Spider-Man 2, obviously, and we've had stuff like Forspoken, which didn't do very well.
I keep forgetting
that. We had Burning Shores as well. So they've had quite a stacked year, and they might get one or two more in there, but I think they'll save Wolverine, you know? Mm. I want to see it. I want to see what they've been working on. I want to see how it plays. I want to see what style of game they're going for. Mm. But I think they might save that for a showcase next year. Focus on Spidey this year. This is Spidey's year.
Right.
Why dilute the messaging, you know what I mean? Get Spidey out the way, quote-unquote, and then kind of throw us into Wolverine next year, maybe for a release then, or 2025.
That's true. They have to walk such a fine line with Marvel stuff as well. I feel like Marvel popularity is just nowhere near what it was when these projects were greenlit, and it's like trying to, you know, one of their greatest strengths is saying that it's PlayStation's Wolverine, or it's PlayStation Spider-Man, and going down that route, and not necessarily bothering with MCU stuff, even though at the minute it's on an uptick, thanks to Guardians 3.
Yes.
I kind of wonder how that stuff gets rolled out. You could be totally right that they just don't address Wolverine until it's ready to go.
And I want to see it. I wonder if they tease it in the Spider-Man game itself and kind of use that to start the marketing campaign for it and then properly get into the weeds with it next year. I mean, I wouldn't bet against it entirely because they did show both of them in the last conference that we had.
Yeah,
so it's not like it's untested grounds. You know, they've done this before, but I think that Spider-Man will get the focus because that's presumably going to get a release date, presumably going to get gameplay, and it's only a few months out.
I think what's kind of crazy is the next Spider-Man game, or even the reboot one, you know, 2018-2019 one, is a lot of people cite the Spider-Man 2 movie tie-in as obviously, and they'll beat that in terms of exploration, swinging around, whatever.
Yeah.
That'll be a really good game, and there's a lot of that old game in the Insomniac one. With Wolverine, I feel like their template is the X-Men Origins Wolverine game, the Raven one.
Yes.
The hack and slash God of War one that had that incredible deformation system with his muscles and bones and everything else. That's what I want them to show off. I don't need them to ape that game entirely, but there were so many awesome design decisions in that game that you can easily just modernize.
I think they'll bring some of that stuff over, but I think structurally, I think they might ape either New God of War or Jedi Survivor. I think that kind of... Oh, did you not go for that?
I don't want more Souls stuff.
Well, no, sorry, not Soulsian. Souls. Not Soulsian in the combat. I mean in the structure of how they... structure their open worlds. You know, they give you kind of these semi-open worlds to explore that's dense with content. They give you lots of different combat encounters, a couple of skill trees here and there. It's not totally open world, but it's not as linear as X-Men Origins Wolverine
I imagined an over-shoulder camera and another lock-on one-by-one style combat model, which I know you absolutely love.
I think that's what we'll go for. Yeah.
But I, for one, I'm getting very sick of it. And so, I wanted them to do something else, something more platinum style, something more... Right. I don't know. Jedi Survivor walks a nice line between the two. where you can just cut loose and carve through 20 dudes with a double lightsaber if you want to, but there's still the Soulsian DNA in there in terms of like one-on-one fights and everything.
Totally. I don't think they'll necessarily adapt that bit of it, but I think like I do think they'll go for the now standard over the shoulder third person lock on combat, but have it as spectacular as Jedi Survivors is and God of War Ragnarok is. Like, they both go for that.
True.
But even though they're obviously, you know, one is more inspired by Souls than the other, but they're still fast paced games. They're still stylish games. They still focus on like giving you a sense of speed and movement and momentum and power. And I think as long as you nail that element of it, you can kind of still have fun within that space.
That's true. Let's talk about Naughty Dog and The Last of Us. Now, we kind of both put these down as things that we think will happen. Your side of it, and we'll talk about this first, is The Last of Us Factions. This is the multiplayer standalone game that initially sort of started as part of Last of Us 2's rollout, became its own thing. We haven't seen any gameplay for it, but we've seen a lot of sketch work and concept art and stuff for it. You had it down here as a 2024 release date. What do you think of the rollout of Factions in general?
I think, you know, this is a game that I'm almost sick of talking about because they've teased it since The Last of Us 2 came out, which was 3 years ago.
Horrible.
We've seen updates since then, like you said, in terms of concept art, but we don't really know how it plays. We don't really know what the focus is. We know there's a kind of single player element in there. I actually want to see it. I want them to just, you know, cut straight to the point and just give us a gameplay demo, show us what an average match, if it is going to be a match-based system, looks like. Show us the world, give us a release date, like commit to it right now.
I think we mentioned this on one of the previous podcasts, but a weird comparison that comes to mind for me is The Division. The way The Division was first shown off, where you're undercover somewhere, you're fighting a bunch of bandits, whatever it is, and someone can beam into your game, either, assumedly in Factions, it could be as an enemy or something as well. But yeah, Neil Druckmann / Naughty Dog have said that it works as a single player game, that they're trying to satisfy that model. No one's ever pulled that off.
No.
So I'm curious if you can make what, in theory, is the next Last of Us before we get Part 3. Maybe that gets teased too, but you know, tie that in with a satisfying enough multiplayer experience. It's kind of what The Division was going to be, in theory.
I wonder if they go for a kind of cliched but effective method with the trailer by showing us what looks like the next Last of Us, and it kind of plays out like a single player level. You know, you're just following one person going through a densely detailed area full of, you know, infected and humans, and they take them out, and it's got that classic Last of Us gameplay. And then at the end, like, another person joins in and it becomes like PvP in that same space, and then it's revealed to be this multiplayer experience. They kind of give you a 1-2 punch of look how detailed this is, combined with can you believe what you just saw was multiplayer and not single player. I think that would be a way to kind of, like I said, it's a little bit cliched, but it's cliched for a reason. It's kind of effective. It's an effective way to do
things. I'm going to make an ancient reference here, but you remember, I can't even remember the name. Enter the Matrix was the Niobian Ghost game.
Yes, yeah. PS2.
When that game was being previewed, there was a preview back, and I think it was an official PlayStation magazine, but back in the day, talking about that game, talking about the gameplay of it, how you would be this, like, you know, Matrix, super secret agent type dude, kicking people in the face, and then one of the enemies that you would down would morph into an agent, and all of a sudden you're in the middle of a boss fight,
right?
Or you're in the middle of something where you need to factor in, you know, this warped enemy. And I love the idea of that, and so I'm just making that reference for the five of us who care about Into the Matrix. But still, I feel like there's something you could do with that idea of you're in a standard Last of Us style encounter, and then someone beams in, maybe you're not fully aware of it, kind of like the Souls style encounters, because that's one of the best things from Souls that you can bring across, the asynchronous multiplayer stuff.
Well, The Last of Us's gameplay is amazing, but for as much as I love The Last of Us Part 2, and I love The Last of Us Part 2, I don't think it quite capitalized on what the Left Behind DLC promised in terms of mixing human enemies and infected enemies and having to navigate that. And if you throw those two elements in there alongside human players, I think you have really dynamic combat encounters. It'll be an absolute nightmare to program. But it's got so much potential, and we'll allow The Last of Us multiplayer experience to differentiate itself from other Battle Royale games or other extraction games by, you know, really centering it in this world and allowing you to use the tools at your disposal.
I wonder if you'll be able to play as the infected, because you'll be up against them anyway, and then maybe I can beam in as a bloater.
Oh, I don't know.
Let me go throw some sacks.
I don't know about that. It gets... Yeah. Oh, man. Like, I've never enjoyed that, even in Left 4 Dead.
The real sack thrower.
The real sack thrower is logged on. No, I mean, they might let you do that. That'd be really cool. Why not give you more options? It will certainly sell skins if you can customize those infected in one way or another.
I take it back. Skin-based Last of Us multiplayer. Yeah, we're probably going in that direction anyway. I also mentioned here that I think we'll get, well, I hope we'll get Naughty Dog's new IP. There's a whole thing that Naughty Dog's overall turnaround, the amount of different projects that they have on the go at any one time, it seems to only be a handful of things. And there was a report that came out a couple of years ago when they were working on The Last of Us 1 remake, whatever you want to call it, pretty much a remake, that was given to a wing of the devs whilst the Neil Druckmanns or the Halle Grosses or whatever worked on their next thing.
Yeah.
And whether that's The Last of Us 3 or whether that's the next Naughty Dog IP or whatever, yeah, I'm curious what that is. And, like, you know, they've kind of talked around the idea of a Last of Us Part 3. It seems like it's going to be happening. But I just want to know what's next from Naughty Dog. This is the longest time they've ever gone without a new IP. And The Last of Us is 10 years old, like, this year. So I'm curious what that is. There was a medieval fantasy game that quote-unquote leaked a few years ago where one of their artists put it on. I think it was, like, his one of his online illustrating profiles that I'm forgetting the website a lot, but it was online, and the idea being that their next project was this medieval fantasy thing, which felt like a big swerve from something they've done before.
Definitely, yeah.
The other thing that was rumored was a sci-fi game, but I'm going like 5-6 years ago, but I think that just kind of came out of the idea that the comics Ellie reads in The Last of Us or Savage Starlight, and maybe that hinted at something or whatever. Either way, I just want the screen to go black during the showcase, the Naughty Dog logo to come on, and it to be something else. I just want to know what else is coming from the minds of that team.
I think everyone does. You know, at this point, it's been 3 years since The Last of Us Part 2. We know The Last of Us Factions is in development. It has been for a long time. I think everyone's eager to see what they can create next and what they can create for the PS5 to shift, you know, units. I want them to do like a proper 1-2 punch of announcements. I want us to fool us into thinking we've seen everything Naughty Dog has to offer with Factions and a big gameplay reveal, and then do exactly what you said right at the end of the show, kind of like how Insomniac did it a few years ago with Wolverine that nobody was expecting. Drop the bombshell that, you know, Naughty Dog's next IP is coming, give us a title, maybe give us a tease of the setting and characters, and then like cut to black and maybe end the show on that and be like, that's what you got to look forward to coming 2025 or whenever it is.
I wonder, the thing is, like, this is a much wider conversation, but like, gut feeling for you, where Naughty Dog are in their career, do you think they'll do something else that is as maturely framed as Last of Us, as like, you know, Uncharted 4, or do they do something that is more adjacent to Jak and Daxter / Crash? I don't necessarily mean a super hyper colored high contrast platformer, but something that is less maudlin and is less shoegazy and whatever. Do they do something that is a bit more highfalutin?
No. I don't think they do. I don't think they go as gritty as The Last of Us still. I think that's
like
corner.
Its own thing,
Completely, you know, monopolized the grit and the trauma and the violence of The Last of
Us. Get it away from
its own thing, but I think they might split the difference in the way that Uncharted 4 did and kind of give us mature characters. And that doesn't have to mean violent characters or anything like that, just complex characters with, you know, human emotions, but ground that in a spectacular world that they're great at creating. Give us over the top action. Essentially just give us like a proper what kind of the MCU used to be, where it had like these really great character moments latched onto this larger than life story with these huge stakes. I think Naughty Dog's great at doing that.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great balance to The Last of Us's world to give us something more extravagant, something maybe sci-fi focused or fantasy focused, but still keeping what we love them for. And I think what a lot of us love them for is that kind of richness of character that they kind of bring out.
I want them to be like, alongside the Sucker Punches, the Insomniacs, I want them to be the team that is making the most of the PS5. And I want to see really fun, extravagant, complex levels that are breaking our minds in terms of how they're rendered. Things like what Respawn do, where you don't realize the whole world is changing, the level's changing behind you until you turn around and you're somewhere else. You whip back around and you're entirely in that new environment. Things where you don't realize the coding side of it. I think someone like a Naughty Dog could show that off. And it's like when I'm playing through Jedi Survivor at 20 frames a second, there's a lot of platforming and stuff in there. There's a lot of really complex level design that is just incredibly well done. And I would love them to sort of mix the old school approach to levels that they had in the platforming era with the character writing, like you said, of the Uncharted, The Last of Us's, frame it out like
that. With that in mind, they're in a funny position, I think. I think they're in the same position that Bethesda was in about 2015, where they used to be the absolute pinnacle of that kind of technical arena. Like, no one was doing stuff like Naughty Dog was doing stuff. They were pushing every console to the max. They were, you know, revolutionizing cinematics and facial technology and animations and all of that stuff. But now all of the other
Sony Studios have kind of leveled up and are now competing with them. Your Insomniacs, your Guerrilla Games, your Sucker Punches. They're all delivering on that technical side. They're all delivering on that cinematic side. So I don't want Naughty Dog to kind of get complacent or kind of fall away like Bethesda did and kind of lose that crown. I want that to encourage them and kind of push them to see what they can do next with this console and see how they can innovate in that space again to kind of prove that they are a cut above not the competition, but their peers.
No, that's the thing. They are that team that shows off what a system can do, and we're yet to see that with the PS5. They will be perfect for it. Next one down is you wrote down Bungie's new IP, and we don't know. Like, you know, speaking of Sony devs and everything, we don't know what Bungie are doing next in terms of, like, you know, they were acquired by Sony. They're working on something else. The trademark for the name Matter was registered a few years ago. But yeah, what do you think we get from Bungie?
Well, Scott Telford, I want to keep this one short because I have no idea what Bungie is doing. Right, they're a weird anomaly in the Sony kind of ecosystem. They were obviously bought, but they're still running independent. Their next games are going to be multi-platform still. They're not making PlayStation 5 exclusives or even PlayStation exclusives. So I think we'll see what they're kind of making right now. I think it'll be a new IP. I think it'll be a shooter, of course. Whether it's third person or first person, I'm not entirely sure.
Ooh, a third person Bungie shooter.
But I think it'll kind of make history by being like a big multi-platform game from a Sony first party team that we've just never seen before, and I think that will kind of prove that we're edging towards the future in a way where things aren't like they used to be. It's not your daddy's Sony anymore.
No, is that what Jim Ryan's talking about with Total Mindshare? Do you get a PlayStation logo in front of stuff that's on the Switch that's in front of stuff on the Xbox? And they had that with MLB The Show on Xbox. You still had a PlayStation logo on there. So
yeah,
I wonder. That may be a way to go. But yeah, Bungie's worth keeping an eye on because the whole stuff that happened with them where they were bought largely for their multiplayer netcode. So assumedly they are doing something that's more multiplayer focus. Obviously, that's their bread and butter, but Halo to Destiny to what? Like, what's that next thing?
Yeah.
That could be interesting. I wrote down Pragmata, which is a multi-platform game from Capcom. It was initially shown off back when the PS5 was first revealed at the very end of 2020, and I initially thought it was a Death Stranding type thing, because the dude, the astronaut that's in it, looks a bit like the Kojima mascot. We've not seen anything from this game since then, and the fact that it's multi-platform might mean that they don't want to focus on it too much here, but I'm curious. Like, that's one of those games that is one of the only things left from that initial salvo of PS5 games that hasn't been followed up on.
Like, Capcom announcing Deep Down and Capcom announcing Pragmata is like the same thing for me at this point. Both at the start of a console generation, both to show off the new tech of what these consoles can do, and then you never see them again. And you have no idea what happened to them. And then we're writing about Pragmata in 10 years' time, like, whatever happened to that game?
I think I deleted it from my notes, but I wrote down, it was Andy Robinson from Video Games Chronicle said that Deep Down was in like a largely finished state or something, but they just didn't come out, canned it, whatever it is. But yeah, that was 10 years ago. And that game obviously wowed a lot of people. Graphically, it was very impressive. It was like the Demon Souls of its day in terms of the remake, in terms of the visual side of it. But yeah, it feels like Capcom had a couple of, they'd sort of test the irons in the fire and then they just don't bother following them all the way through.
No.
So I guess we'll see. But I'm noting down Pragmata as something that could happen.
It would kind of be uncharacteristic for modern day Capcom to just ignore it though, I think. Like, they've been on such a hot streak with their big franchises, Resident Evil, Devil May Cry, Monster Hunter. I want to see them make a new IP with the same care and attention that they've given their established franchises. Mm. And I mean, from the stuff that we've already shouted out so far, there's a lack of new IP that we're talking about. You know, we've only got a couple. So yeah, I want to see something kind of fresh and something a little bit new.
Speaking of big Capcom franchises, you had down Resident Evil 4 VR and also the Separate Ways DLC being revealed.
Yes, I did, Scott Telford. Last year, or maybe even the year before, they announced that there was going to be a VR component for Resi 4. That just started development a month or so before Resident Evil 4 Remake came out, so I don't expect to see it anytime soon, but I would like to see some kind of update or maybe some kind of trailer of how that game runs in VR, because just to please me, because this showcase should be built around my interests and my needs. That said, I do
Sack off Spider-Man VR. Give you Resident Evil 4 again.
Sack off Spider-Man. That's not your sister seller. It's Resident Evil. No, I also think we'll see Separate Ways as well. That was heavily teased in the core game, not to give you any specific spoilers, but they literally dropped the phrase Separate Ways that is said pointedly at a certain point.
Right.
And there are a few cut areas from the game that a lot of people on the internet are assuming will be used in a Separate Ways DLC to expand it a little bit and to get those fan favorite elements in there. Mm-hmm. I think it's inevitable that it's happening. And I think at a few months out of the Resident Evil 4 launch window is the time to announce it. And Resident Evil has historically been associated with Sony, so it probably won't be an exclusive or anything like that. But if it's going to be anywhere, I think it'll be at Sony's conference.
It also means that Capcom can dodge talking about, like I said, the many irons in the fire, the many IPs that they could be talking about as a new thing. Now, in the words of Alan Partridge, can I shock you?
Yeah, you can.
Good. I want to do a thing that sounds ridiculous, but I just, you know, why not? If you're going to go big, you might as well go big.
Go on.
Why not a new Metal Gear Solid exclusive to the PlayStation 5 from Hideo Kojima himself?
Now,
I have reasons. I have reasons for this. Adam Nicholas celebrating in the corner. I agree. I think that it's worth pointing out that Silent Hill 2's remake is PlayStation exclusive for 12 months. I think it's worth pointing out that Konami have been rumored to be doing a deal with Sony in regards to new Castlevania, new Silent Hill, new Metal Gear Solid. I think it's worth pointing out that Hideo Kojima on Twitter has been talking a hell of a lot about Metal Gear Solid. Is that because he's going back to his design docs for Metal Gear Solid 1 through 3, thinking about what he might do for a new Metal Gear Solid?
I think that man spent his entire life trying to get away from Metal Gear. He's not going back. He's got his own stuff to do now. I think he's having the same... See that Martin Scorsese interview at the weekend where he was like, oh, now I'm old. I don't have time to tell the stories I want to tell. I think Kojima's probably thinking about that after 30 years of Metal Gear. He's finally got Death Stranding in the works. He's finally got that established. He's got other stuff, potentially a horror game to come.
Right.
I don't think that man is going back to Metal Gear unless it's as a consultant. I think they might be able to get him in that capacity, but as a director... Oh, I don't know, man.
The thing is, I don't think he was trying to get away from Metal Gear. I think he was trying to get away from Konami.
Right.
I think there is a worthwhile split there, even though I agree. I mean, he was literally writing Metal Gear Solid 4 and aging Snake to literally kill the guy because he's like, stop making me do these games. So I totally get that. I just think that it's definitely banana sandwich, ridiculous pick. But I feel like you have a Hideo Kojima that has a very good relationship with Sony. You have these deals that seem to be going on with Konami. It makes business sense on Konami's side to let someone else do all the heavy lifting and take care of Kojima and do his ridiculous budgetary side of things.
Yeah.
And all they need to do is sit back and go, that IP belongs to us. Where's my check?
I know it's practically ancient history at this point, all the way back in 2015, but the bad blood between Kojima and Konami was so strong at the time. I don't know if those wounds would have necessarily healed. And I think they must know that if they did announce this, that's the first thing that people will be asking about, right? They'd be like, well, what happened previously? I don't think Konami is at the point yet to paint themselves as the bad guys. Mm. And that's how they would come across in this situation, because it would be absolutely marketed by fans and pundits online as a kind of reclamation of the franchise by Kojima. And I just don't know if they'll give him that. I just don't know if they would want that to be the narrative around a new Metal Gear game.
Right. I'm curious. The Konami that existed back in 2015, I don't think is the same version now because of the amount of inroads they've been making back into their IPs. The amount of effort that was put into that Silent Hill live stream, there was way more on that than just a couple of dudes in a room with a camera. It felt nicely produced. And we have all the different collections they put out for Castlevania or for TMNT. It feels like they care. Whoever's leading the charge now at Konami at least cares a bit about video games. I'm curious, as opposed to Pachinko and everything. And I was just like, what's the most out there thing that there's a little bit of each part of that, the Konami side of it, the Kojima side of it, the Sony side of it. There's enough there that if they did say that was happening, I'd be like, okay, I can see how that came together.
I will give you, I do think they will make a Metal Gear Solid 6 or definitely a proper sequel, a proper continuation of that franchise. I just... And Kojima might even be involved, man. I just can't see him there as a director. I can see them wanting his name on the project in some way because it gives it validity, it gives it authenticity, it makes it separate to Metal Gear Survive. Mm-hmm. But I just think...
What about that game?
Yeah, okay. I just think it's a big step from being a consultant or even an executive producer to being the man in charge of it. That's the jump I can't quite see, but it would be insane, right? And it would break everything and we would go nuts for it.
Yes. Something like that. Because the thing, I can't get around the fact that when Sony acquired Hideo Kojima, I just have to imagine that was because they want the next major franchise from him, the next Metal Gear franchise. Doesn't have to be Metal Gear, but I feel like they want something from Kojima that is more in that wheelhouse, not the mountain climbing game that is Death Stranding, even though we all love it. I'm just going down complete cynical business mind.
Yeah.
I don't think they acquired him to make that. And so I'm just curious, can you lock him into something that is more Metal Gear style going forward, even if it's like 5 years away or something? So I'm curious about that. Let's finish on Ghost of Tsushima 2. Now, this is something that Jeff Grubb, that's how big of an announcement Ghost of Tsushima 2 would be, sending Ructions through the studio.
Hi. I'm going to go for this, right? Because Jeff Grubb, obviously, like you said it wasn't going to happen.
Yes.
But I'm going to say it is. I don't have the sources that Jeff Grubb has. I've just got a gut feeling. And I feel like
that's all you need.
The thing that's got to be in production, right?
Yes.
Like, I hope that Jeff Grubb is having us on and just trying to make us lower our expectations. I'm sure he's not. I'm sure he's really well informed.
He's on the take.
And I'm sure he's completely right when I'm completely wrong. But I kind of want to manifest this into existence. I want to make it happen because it's been 3 years since Ghost of Tsushima 1. Mm-hmm. That's about enough time for me for them to have a sequel quite far in development. Mm-hmm. I don't think it'll be out this year. It might not even hit next year, but I think with the big hitters that are going to be out the way now, like I said, your Final Fantasy's out the way, your God of War already done, your Horizon already done, they're not getting sequels anytime soon, Spider-Man about to come out. I think now is the time to move on to your, like, most, the franchise that you have with the most potential, and that's Ghost of Tsushima. And it just, to me, it makes too much sense. But Grubb's telling me I'm wrong, so I'm probably wrong.
Grubb also thinks, as part of the Games Mass podcast that he put up, saying that the KOTOR remake will never come out. So we'll see what happens with all those things.
With Ghost of Tsushima, the reason I think it will happen this year is because it's a promise of longevity for the console. It's what you're looking forward to going into the next year, you know what I mean? And Sony doesn't have to announce that now. They could have another showcase this time next year that gets people hyped for it then and gets people buying a console for it then. But I think, you know, I think we've got this year covered. I think we've got this year down to a T, a lot of great things to look forward to, a lot of reasons to buy a PlayStation 5. But what's next year? You know what I mean? And Spider-Man VR, maybe. And what's the thing that we would be looking forward to? It would be Ghost of Tsushima 2.
It would. Like you said, that makes the most sense. That is also one of their newest IPs that managed to take the F off, unlike a Destruction All-Stars or whatever. So it is very much worth keeping up with that stuff. But yeah, we will see what happens with the showcase. It is on Wednesday night. And so that's going to be, I think, 9 p.m. for us UK time.
Certainly
so
is.
So we're going to mop that up and then we'll do some videos afterwards. So come check out the channel later on UK time and we'll wrap up whatever shenanigans come from this showcase. For now, though, this has been the Wind Up Podcast. Please subscribe to the World Culture Gaming Podcast overall. Ivan Scott Taylor. That's been Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be seen by all of you, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.